Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. We do have a treat in store for you. You are here at CJSF.ca radio show, the Saluwa show, where my guest and I speak up so you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. I'm so grateful today that Eco Wisdom has let us share with our listeners a monumental workshop with three segments, three themes related to nature. I want to introduce you to the director, co-founder of Eco Wisdom, Dr. Carrie Carl, and she is going to share three different aspects of nature studies and how our brains and emotions work. Dr. Carrie has a PhD in psychology and was working as a health researcher and professor of disability studies when she suddenly acquired a severe disability affecting many areas of function, including mobility, hearing, and neurocognition. She has found nature to be the best medicine, offering physical, emotional, and spiritual healing. Now she lives off-grid on the Eco Wisdom Forest Preserve amid wild roaming moose, bear, and wolves. Sometimes when she told me that, I said, there are bears there? Where the trees help her manage her pain. With collaborators, she uses images and videos from this land and other green spaces to continue to offer online accessible nature well-being programs. Programs that are designed to be accessible to people living with disability, chronic illness, or challenges associated with aging. Eco Wisdom often and regularly offers a unique nature and forest therapy guide certification training program that focuses on accessibility and inclusion. Carrie, love to have you begin to share what you have put together today for us.
Well, what a treat it is that we have three additional Eco Wisdom community members. Of course, Charlotte, you are a graduate of our training program, but we also have Karma, Brandy, and Melissa. So I'd like to introduce you and share a little bit about each one of our special guests today. Karma makes her home beside the Kootenay Lake in the mountains of South Central British Columbia. She has raised her family of six children and now enjoys her grandchildren. They are witnessing the wonder that they have for the natural world. Karma is an active member of the Eco Wisdom community who brings a special interest in mindfulness to her study, practice, and her leading and facilitation of nature therapy programs. She has found that the Eco Wisdom training has helped in her efforts to nurture people's deepening relationship with nature. It is Karma's great joy to expand the unseen energetic relationships between all beings. Of particular interest in the course was the mindful reverence and respect for the land and her many beings, and how we are all connected. This focal point is represented by a deepening understanding of the mycelium network in the earth. And Karma lives with deep gratitude for the tree beings and all of that are all in her life. And with their support, she looks forward to continuing to facilitate or co-facilitate accessible nature well-being programs for others as a way to offer a more expansive healing awareness of nature as a nature and forest therapy guide. Welcome, Karma, and thank you so much for being here.
Okay, I have a little land acknowledgement I'd like to share.
Of course.
So where I'm living is the southeast corner of British Columbia, and it's primarily part of the traditional territory of the Tinaha people, hence the name Kootenay has come about. We are deeply and honestly grateful for the stewardship practiced over eons by the Tinaha people, and also for the example and teaching provided by this nation to this day. Much gratitude.
Thank you so much, Karma, for that additional piece. So important.
Thank you.
And now I would like to introduce a recent graduate of the Ecowisdom Nature and Forest Therapy Guide Training Program, Brandy Cook. Brandy is a holistic nutritionist and culinary graduate, blending food and nutrition to guiding clients towards a better sense of health. She's been an advocate for disability awareness, contributing to accessibility improvements in the Lower Mainland of British Columbia. With a background in public speaking, she now combines her holistic approach with her certification as a nature and forest therapy guide, helping individuals deal with pain and anxiety through mindful nature connection. Brandy, it's so lovely to have you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us. And I understand that you too have a statement you would like to read.
Yes, I'd like to. I live in the south coast of British Columbia at a little place called Tawasin. I'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the land that I'm on today. As an Indigenous person from the Pacific Northwest coast and a resident of Vancouver, BC, I'd like to acknowledge that we are gathered today on the traditional territory of the Coast Salish peoples. This land has been cared for and inhabited by the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations since time immemorial. Let us honor their enduring connection to this land and commit to respecting their stewardship. My people were also caretakers of the land and have been for thousands of years. They are the Haida and Tsimshian nations who have lived by the forest and the sea, whose name means heart and inside the skeena. We commit to take only what we need from this earth, leaving enough for those who come after us, just as my ancestors have done, my people, the killer whale, Gisbudwara. I want to pay respect to the mighty tree beings who have been our companions and protectors since the beginning. May we gather in one-mindedness. May we flatten all hierarchy. May we live and breathe gratitude and give thanks for the gift of life. And in my native tongue, I'd like to thank you for having me today. Hawa. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brandy.
It was beautiful.
And I would like to add, just before I introduce Melissa, that I live on the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin people in Ontario. And I commit to continue living lightly upon the earth, relying on solar power and collected rainwater. I honor this land, its original caretakers, and the Indigenous presence that currently continues to exist in this region. I express my appreciation for the teachings that have been most generously offered to me directly from the trees, the stone, and the moose, one of whom visited me a couple of days ago. May the many gifts I receive in the form of the softness of moss, the vastness of a star-filled sky, and comfort of clear flowing water continue to spark my desire to bring an enactment of nature's lessons on inclusion and equity as we endeavor to confront ableism, racism, colonialism, and other forms of discrimination, as we recognize everyone's place in the natural world and within our programs at Ecowisdom. Thank you. And now I would like to introduce our very special guest, Dr. Melissa Ming-Fuentes, who recently gave a workshop to our Nature and Forest Therapy guides on the nervous system, ways to manage stress in the nervous system, and also the impacts of discrimination on the nervous system. And this was a great resource for our nature and forest therapy guides as we endeavor to make our programs inclusive to everyone. It is my pleasure to introduce to you today our Ecowisdom guest educator, Dr. Melissa Ming-Fuentes. Melissa is She's exceptional and experienced clinical psychologist with a PhD in psychology who specializes in trauma-informed mindfulness, meditation, and yoga. With her expertise in both Eastern and Western healing modalities, Melissa believes that we all have an innate capacity for empowered and resilient living, and that with the right combination of supports, tools, and commitment, we can all find our way to a place of growth and transformation. Melissa has nearly 20 years of experience working with survivors of various kinds of trauma, including those who have been marginalized or harmed due to aspects of their identity, such as gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, socioeconomic status, neurodiversity, religion, as well as visible and non-visible disabilities. I am incredibly impressed by Melissa and the way she is able to seamlessly weave together compassion, knowledge that is evidence-based and well-documented in the biological, social, and psychological sciences. Melissa has authored over 60 peer-reviewed publications and educational products in the area of trauma and recovery. I have been honored to know Melissa for several years now, and in fact, she and I met while we were taking the Mindfulness Meditation Teacher Certification Training led by Tara Brack and Jack Kornfield, a training that includes a six-month unit on diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility. I have deeply appreciated Melissa's receptivity to learning more about accessibility for those of us living with disability, and also the ways that she has generously shared her wisdom and analysis as it relates to equity for members of Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities. It is with a great sense of gratitude that I welcome Melissa to join us in this conversation today, to speak to us on matters that are so important as we work as nature and forest therapy guides at EcoWisdom. And within our work, within our community, we attempt to make room for everyone within our Mindful Nature Connection programs. And this includes people who may live with disability or chronic illness or have trauma histories or be gender diverse, or perhaps they're members of BIPOC communities or multiple identities here listed in here. And so it is such a delight and so important to have you join us in this conversation. Thank you so much for being here, Melissa.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and it really is a true honor to be here with all of you, just this incredible community of people so dedicated to serving these communities and doing important work. And I just want to take a moment to do a bit of an acknowledgement, gratitude of my own. So I want to acknowledge that I live in Durham, North Carolina in the United States, which was originally the territory of several Native nations, including the Tutelo and Saponi-speaking peoples. And many of those communities were displaced or killed through war, disease, and colonial expansion. And today, the area is surrounded by contemporary Native nations, the descendants of the Tutelo, Saponi, and other indigenous peoples who survived early colonization. And these nations include the Halawa Saponi, the Saponi, and the Okanichi band of Saponi. I also want to acknowledge, honor, and respect the diverse history of other indigenous peoples in North Carolina and recognize their continuing connections to this land, the water, culture, and pay respect to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Also want to acknowledge the overlapping histories of this land, including past violence and ongoing harm produced by the legacy of racialized slavery and oppression here. And also in general want to express my acknowledgement and gratitude to my own ancestors and the ancestors of others who came before us and fought very hard, often with minimal resources, for justice and equality and respectful and reciprocal relationships to the land and each other. And I want to acknowledge all of my teachers, mentors, family, loved ones, clients, all of the elements of the earth and all the beings here. And want to acknowledge all of you, as you too are my teachers and inspirations, and anyone who might be listening, for your dedication and willingness to learn and serve the communities that you do.
Thank you so much for that. So I would like to offer a sort of a jumping off point. Is that okay, Charlotte?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're in a safe place to jump.
Okay. So in our nature and forest therapy guide training program, you know, it's fairly comprehensive. We talk about, we have a whole unit on ecology, another on land-based spiritualities, and a whole unit on mindfulness. And that's where we start talking about, you know, the nervous system. And we do an online retreat. And that's when Melissa came and did her workshop with us as part of that. And I think it's important, you know, that we understand that, you know, the scientific literature shows us that both mindfulness and forest bathing or mindful nature connection can, you know, help us, you know, resource in terms of our nervous system, sort of regulate. But I thought maybe we could start with Melissa, you sort of giving us like a framework for understanding for us and for the listeners. What is the nervous system and how can we sort of understand the nervous system? Maybe you could reference the parasympathetic and sympathetic and maybe the window of tolerance. Can you give us like a sort of a framework for understanding the nervous system?
Sure. And I really love talking about this because I think it provides a very non-judgmental and compassionate framework for understanding our bodies and our minds and how we respond to stressors in our environment. So in all mammals, I'll say, and in humans particularly, we have two branches of the nervous system that have very important responsibilities. One branch is the parasympathetic part of the nervous system. Some people refer to that as the rest and digest part of the nervous system because it's the part of the nervous system that puts the brakes on our stress response. The sympathetic nervous system is the branch that mobilizes our stress response. Sometimes we think about stress as something negative or something that needs to be managed. And while that sometimes is the case, we actually do need a part of our bodies to be mobilized in the face of stressors, regardless of how big or small or they might be. So the sympathetic system is the part that does mobilize us to respond to stressors that put us outside of what we can tolerate in that moment. Now, it's not because of some deficiency in us that that mobilization is required. It is because of the nature of the stressor. And oftentimes, the stress responses that get mobilized are things like setting a boundary or making a request. And we could think of that as sort of a fight response. A flight response might be withdrawing from a situation, removing yourself, taking some quiet time. More of a freeze response might be being very quiet, not saying anything. More of a fawn response might be really trying to appease or pacify or de-escalate someone who is being really aggressive towards you. And sometimes people think that some of those responses are better than the other, but there's no hierarchy. They're actually all valid. There is a time and a place for all of them. And so in order to build and maintain resilient nervous systems, and therefore be resilient beings in the world, we want to be able to have access to all four of those stress responses and also to be able to come back down to more of a baseline level after that stressor is over. So the reason why this is important is that we ideally would like to stay within what many people refer to as the window of tolerance. A lot of the time. The window of tolerance, if I could sort of boil it down into some descriptors, are it's like a state of being in which you are calm but not tired, you are alert but not anxious, you're connected and you're able to regulate. And there are strategies and skills you can build to widen your window. So it's not like if in this moment you feel like you have a very narrow window of tolerance, it doesn't take you a lot to not feel calm or not feel anxious, or if it doesn't take a lot to put you into anxiety or to put you into more of a stress mode, you can build that tolerance. You can widen that window through things like what Carrie mentioned, nature-based mindfulness, mindful movement, forest bathing. And then unfortunately, there are things that can decrease our window, like chronic stress, like trauma. So Dan Siegel refers to the window of tolerance as the river of integration, a place of harmony and flow and ease. And I like this metaphor because he also talks about how outside of that river of integration, of harmony and flow and ease, we have two banks. One is a more chaotic, turbulent, unstable, out of control bank, which some people scientifically would probably refer to as hyper arousal, which I'll explain more in a moment. And the other bank of the river is more of a rigid kind of state. There's stuckness, there's stagnancy, and that's referred to as more of a hypo arousal kind of state. So the sympathetic nervous system, the one that mobilizes your stress response, is the part of the nervous system that would put you into either hyper or hypo arousal. And the sympathetic nervous system is the part that would bring you back into your window of tolerance. So if you think about this window of tolerance as this easily flowing river and then these two banks outside of the river, before you get to full-fledged hyper arousal or hypo arousal, you can also experience dysregulation. So it's not like you just go from your window of tolerance to complete hyper arousal or hypo arousal. There is a sort of in-between state. But just to give you a sense of what that could look like, a hyper arousal state is something like extreme anxiety or rage, feeling overwhelmed by threats, a lot of agitation, maybe even impulsivity, a lot of not feeling in control, maybe very reckless behavior. It could be even be something like a panic attack, just very agitated, increased heart rate. There could be a change in the tone of your skin, often in increased breathing. Whereas something on the hypoarousal end would look more like disconnection, maybe memory loss, feeling numb or shut down, very zoned out, maybe even losing track of time, feeling spacey or sluggish, and perhaps more of a decreased heart rate, more of a pale tone. Sometimes people will even have bluish lips, decreased breath pattern. Of course, there's some individual variation, and that's not how it looks like for everyone, but I do think it can be an important strategy for building your window of tolerance to start recognizing for your own self what are some signs that you're veering outside of your window, and what personalized strategies can you use to come back into that window.
I just wanted to jump in and offer a couple of real life examples of what, you know, has come up in our conversations with participants. And then I want to invite Brandy and Karma if they have examples related to nature connection, offering some calming or regulating sort of effects for them or in people that they've guided. So I guess the first thing I want to say is that we've noticed in our programming that sometimes people are getting in touch with what can be really challenging emotions. For example, we might have we do a lot of mirror neuron activation with the videos. So it might be my hand on the bark or my feet on the moss. So, well, for many people, that can be like a real visceral sensory experience and pleasing. For some people, it really puts them in touch with grief, things that they can no longer do, engage in. They can no longer do these things. And so, or I remember one was a video of in a canoe going through a wetland, and somebody was saying, oh, it's beautiful and it's lovely, and I'm experiencing some grief. And so what we do in the nature connection programs is we honor all of the range of emotions. So I think and then sometimes it comes up after a little bit of time. And the programs we run, the Accessible Nature Wellbeing program model is actually 2.5 hours. So we're together in community over time, and the connection goes deeper. And I think that window of tolerance broadens so that people do get in touch with these deeper, more difficult, we call them complex emotions. And so we just validate, right, as facilitators of a program. But it's something we definitely have observed in the program is that people are, because we're not saying you're not to have grief, right? We're trying to encourage moments of relief and regulation that then opens that window of tolerance so people can have those moments of pleasure, moments of social connection, and acknowledging and sharing feelings of grief in a context where they feel comfortable. One thing I wanted to say. And then as you were describing the kinds of symptoms or signs of dysregulation, you know, this is something that we teach our guides, because if we notice, you know, I remember, you know, for an in-person program, and this was a group, and this one person had never done forest bathing, and I could tell from her body language, you know, her arms were crossed, she was kind of like moving back and forth, like fidgety, and I'm like, okay, let's begin with how would you feel about beginning with, and then I offered like a grounding exercise to sort of again offer the resources and expand that window of tolerance, and that brought that person back into a state of regulation. So it's interesting to hear you talk about these things, and then how we're seeing it play out as guides but also in our participants. And I just want to pass it on and open it up. Brandy, did you have anything you want to share? And then we'll go to Karma.
Yeah, with regards to what you were saying, and Melissa as well, I do really think that there is a place for holding that grief, especially when it, you know, having the lived experience of a disability now for almost 30 years. When I first started this program, I was absolutely amazed at the feelings that did start to come out. These were things that I thought I was okay with, you know, for all these years of being in a wheelchair. But when we did the mirroring and having you touching the bark and like having your feet in that cold, beautiful river, I was amazed at the feelings it brought up in me. There was a lot of grief. There was a lot of like feeling like, I remember when I was young and nature was so important to me, and I would run in the dirt and just have so much fun. And now, of course, I can't do that. But along with that, there was so much beauty and being able to see that this nature is also turning around and helping me with things like calming my nervous system and helping other people that I can see when I'm, you know, walking people through these meditations. One specific example was I just had a bit of an event in August where I was hospitalized. We thought it was like a heart complication. And when they finally moved me to a room where there was a beautiful tree outside of my room, I can't believe the difference that made. I sat with that tree, watched the sun set on it morning and night, and put all of this into practice and just sat there with that tree. And I asked that tree to look after me. And I you know, gave that tree, said, may you be well as well. And together we were friends in that hospital room. And it works. It's beautiful. It's a very beautiful experience. Yeah.
I wanted to just comment on honoring grief, because a lot of things in the model, as you were talking about problems, you see commercials coming up for this, take that, for this, take that, or even people questioning us when we're talking about positive things. That we have to take time to honor that a person might feel, since they've lost their sight, they really don't want to live, and really be able to hear what they're saying, rather than someone saying, you know about nature, you should be able to help, you know, make the person feel happier. And I think that just the feeling, being grounded and being able to hear someone's grief, then helps to move to that next point of the next point in the window where you can see hope and you can see gratitude. But I thank you for emphasizing that living with the grief or helping someone who's dealing with the grief live with it, rather than saying, you should be getting beyond that, you know. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so important. And Karma.
Well, kind of curious when you mentioned that canoe. That triggered grief for me. I remember that part of the training when we were on that river with that craft, and that where I went that time was under the water with the creatures and just felt at one with that. Now, those of you that don't know me, I was injured about 8 years ago, and I was injured in the water. And as soon as I could, I got back on the water in craft, not walking in it or anything. And one of the best things that I did was to say yes to going in the kayak. And this is really what taught me a lot about mind, nature, connection. I went down into the water in this kayak, and the minute that craft became buoyant, then the constant electric pain got shushed. It got shushed down to where I hadn't experienced before. And that moment of medicine I carry with me all the time. And I can call on that little experience when things are getting out of hand, which with this kind of pain is often and long. And I can just be in that space. And it's so very helpful. Now, recently, I've been teaching individualized adapted yoga for a few years now, a couple of years, three, I guess. And I have one student that's been with me the whole time, and she's becoming very proficient. And she's just been in the hospital. She broke her leg. And she amazed the doctors, the nurses, and the physio with how she handled that pain. And because of Eco Wisdom, I've been able to add another dimension to the teaching. And she was able to use her mind, the mirroring that we do in the yoga, but it's also Eco Wisdom techniques. And they were just amazed at how she handled a level of pain. And they asked her how, and she said, yoga breathing. She didn't say anything else, but she's using her visualizing. And that is such a powerful tool. And I'm so grateful that it's taught in the Eco Wisdom program, because it will reach people that would maybe not have come across it in another way. So anyway, being one with yourself and the water, your feelings, and you can call in. I can call in the light of the sky to do the same thing as the water, and helps me stay functioning and even happy. Anyways, I hope that made a bit of sense.
It makes so much sense, Karma. And I would like, I think Charlotte's going to introduce a break momentarily. Yes. But after the break, I think that what we will do is we will pick up on a couple of things that you mentioned. You talked about breath work and visualization, and these are sort of strategies that can support our nervous system, can resource us. They're things that we talk a lot about in the Eco Wisdom training. And so I think, Charlotte, did you want to introduce a bit of a break at this point?
Yes, I'd like to say, remind listeners that you are listening to the SULUAU show, where my listeners speak up, where you can listen up and act upon what you've heard. Today, you are hearing wonderful segments from a workshop held by Eco Wisdom that is dealing with the nervous system, importance of nature to calm the nervous system of people with disabilities, and the importance of mindful nature connections to calm the nervous system in people who experience a variety of intersecting forms of discrimination. In our first section, you got some wonderful personal stories, lived experiences. You didn't, as you might see on some health programs, we weren't telling you, scientists don't want you to know about this. You can get this information for $49.99. You know, you have gotten really authentic information. So we're going to not skip over the nervous system. You have some rich treasures of nuggets of information, but we're going to go into the second section, which is the importance of nature to calm the nervous system of people with disabilities who experience unique stressors related to discrimination barriers. And we'll remind you that our featured guest instructor today is Dr. Melissa Ming-Fuanes, and she has just got everybody that attended the workshop last month and who's listening today excited about furthering their knowledge of how they can be helpful in this area. So, Carrie, back to the flow of our inspiring conversations. These are conversations, and we, since some of the previous Eco Wisdom podcast, people have heard them on our station and they've asked if they could be played again. So I'm sure this one will be one that people will request because it's so rich with information that's easy for people to apply. And it's so easy as well throughout Canada to get in touch with a guide who has a level of authenticity, but also just the desire to help people rather than to see how they might profit from them. So now I will just go on to nervous system, nature, and disability with Dr. Carrie carrying on.
Thank you. And you know, maybe this is a good time to let people know that Eco Wisdom has a website, ecowisdom.ca. We have Instagram, Eco Wisdom Forest Preserve with an underscore in between. And we have a team of over 20 people and it's growing. And we have another whole resource that we'll be adding to the website of our graduating nature and forest therapy guides. And these are people that are trained in the science of forest bathing, but also things like accessibility and the effects of discrimination on the nervous system and the ways that spending time in nature can build a sense of community and peer support and belonging. And so really we encourage people to check us out and contact our guides for their wisdom. All right, so here we are back again for our second segment. So in our first segment, we talked about the nervous system and gave some real life examples. And now I'd like us to move into talking about a couple of specific strategies that we use in our Eco Wisdom training program. And I'm going to pass it over to Melissa in a minute to sort of elaborate on sort of some of the foundational knowledge of why it's important and how we can facilitate resourcing to build regulation into our participants who might be coming into a program. Eco Wisdom serves a very diverse population, and so we may very well have people who have experiences that make them a little bit more sensitive to nervous system disruptions. And so I'm going to pass it over to you, Melissa, to talk a little bit about, and I'm particularly interested in the use of visualization. We do that a lot in our programs, and also breath work and connecting breath work with something like movement, because we do that also in our mindful movement as part of our model. Can I pass it over to you to just provide us a little bit of scientific background?
Sure, of course. And if it's okay, I'd like to segue into this by building off of some comments in the last segment about grief, because sometimes I think people have a misunderstanding that mindfulness is a bypass for grief, or the goal is for us to be happy or joyful all the time. And I actually really think of mindfulness as a way to be with and hold our experiences and the spectrum of experiences we carry as humans. And with grief in particular, grief isn't necessarily something that takes us outside of our window of tolerance. Like, sometimes we can be crying and feel physical pain with the weight of grief, but still feel like it's tolerable or bearable. And so one of our mentors, Kari Tara Brock, often talks about this idea of this belongs. Like, whatever comes up in mindfulness belongs. And that is part of what we are practicing, is that inclusion, not shutting our own selves out of our hearts. And so I just wanted to highlight that, because sometimes when we slow down and get present, it's not pleasant. And a lot of intense emotions come up. But it is an act of self-compassion to witness that in ourselves, and also to have companions in that, whether it's nature, whether it's human community, whether it's animals. I mean, it could be all sorts of things. So I think something I often ask myself when an intense emotion comes up in a mindfulness practice is, what is here? And can I be with this with kindness? And that is often how we think about mindfulness, a branch of awareness. What is here right now? And compassion. Can I be with this with kindness? And if the answer is no, then perhaps we bring in some kind of regulation tool, which I know we're about to talk about. So you don't have to force yourself to be with something that is so painful to be with that you feel panicked or frozen, or you're starting to dissociate. However, it is important to learn to trust your own wisdom about your window of tolerance. No one else can tell you whether you're inside or outside of it. And so I think it's important to be self-compassionate and not force yourself to stay with an emotion or an experience that is too difficult in that moment. But I think it's also important to not overly fragilize ourselves or other people and assume that they can't tolerate something that they're experiencing on the inside. So I think mindfulness and I think nature can really help us hold a lot of life difficulties and complexities. So I wanted to just put that out there, that grief is very real. Lots of intense emotions can come up, but that doesn't necessarily mean we're dysregulated. Like, intense emotion is different than dysregulation. It's different than being outside that window. So Kari, you asked specifically to talk about some of the strategies that you all highlight in the program for regulation, and I love all of them. So visualization, I think, can be a really powerful strategy. Like any strategy, not every strategy is for everyone. So I think it's also important to recognize that if a certain strategy doesn't work for you, there's nothing wrong with you. You don't have to force it. It just doesn't work for you, and that's okay. There's a lot of research that a lot of people with different forms of neurodiversity really struggle with visualization. So that's something to keep in mind. But that's not true for everyone who's neurodiverse. So with visualization, you know, some of the other strategies you mentioned, Kari, like breathing or movement or combining breathing and movement can be powerful. But some of those can't be accessible to people. Movement, for example, or even breathing. Certain kinds of traumas, medical procedures, can create trauma associations with breathing in certain ways. And so sometimes even visualizing a certain way of breathing or a certain rhythm of the ocean or the swaying of the trees. Like, if we think about breath, one of the things scientifically that helps with breath is the rhythmic nature of breath. And so there are other ways to access that rhythm. Again, that could be movement. It could be combining breath with movement, perhaps moving your hands or your body in a certain way as you breathe. But you can also do that visually if movement or breathing aren't accessible to you or don't work for you. And you could also visualize a different kind of place than you're in. Like, if the say you're in a group that's doing forest bathing, and for you, there are certain associations with forests or trees that are agitating or bring up grief or trauma, you could visualize another soothing place in your head, or even a color. Sometimes even visualizing a supportive figure. It could be real, it could be imagined, the person, it could be a person, doesn't have to be living or dead, it could be a spiritual figure, anything that has some sort of sense of meaning to you. It could even be a color, like bringing, a photograph, bringing a photograph with you, and looking at that, or visualizing a favorite photograph. So I do think visualization can be really powerful. You can also visualize yourself moving if movement isn't accessible to you. Or you could visualize yourself walking through the forest and creating a mandala of found objects. So there's like, the sky is the limit when it comes to visualization. And I think that can be a really powerful strategy. Breathing, you mentioned, Kari, there are so many different kinds of breathing practices. And some can be more helpful to people than others. So some people prefer a more vigorous breath pattern, especially if they feel tired or sluggish. This is not a technical breath pattern, but I call it the sniff, sniff, ha, ha breath pattern, where you're like, sort of like that. That's a more invigorating breath pattern that can be really regulating for people. Sometimes something that is more slow, like deep belly breathing, or aligning movement with breath, or counting. I mentioned kind of expanding and contracting your hands with inhale and exhale, or moving them in and up and down, or in and out, or side to side, and experimenting with where to put your focus. Is it on the movement? Is it on the sensations of breath? Is it both? Or do you want to visualize that? So those are all breath patterns and visualizations that can be helpful. And I'll just make a brief comment about movement so other people can chime into with their wisdom and input. But typically rhythmic movements, like I mentioned, can be really regulating. So that could be swaying or rocking or even stretching. Sometimes even just wiggling fingers and toes can be helpful. Sometimes just reminding your body that it exists in some way. It could even be blinking your eyes or moving your jaw, those kinds of things. This is slightly different than movement, but it feels connected to me, which is self-contact. There is something that can be very regulating to the nervous system about self-contact, whether it's from, say, a weighted blanket or some kind of texture of your clothing, but it can also be from placing your hands on your body in a certain kind of way. And the science behind that is that the felt sensation of something on the body helps connect to the oldest part of the brainstem, which is the part of the, like, sort of the reptilian part of our brain, the part of our brain that can drive intense activation. And you can experiment with what kinds of self-contact feels best. More tender options, like hand on heart or hand on belly or hugging yourself, or more like strong and fierce options, like having two arms on your hips or having a fist on your chest with another hand over it. So, and again, that can also be a visualization if that self-contact isn't accessible to you. So I know I kind of like took us on a little bit of a circuitous route with blending these strategies together. But if I missed anything, Kari, definitely feel free to ask or cue me.
I'd like to jump in and highlight a couple of points that you raised. And then again, I'll open it up to Karma and Brandy to offer their insights in terms of their own experience of nature connection or in facilitating programs with others. One thing you mentioned and emphasized is choice. But you know that sometimes some practices might be grounding, but for other people, it's not going to work at all. And so to always offer choice. And it's interesting because when we are training our guides to be considering accessibility, we need to offer choice. It's just essential. And I think that offering choice is also, as it turns out, trauma-informed too. It helps the nervous system, whatever your background, whatever your experiences may be. So choice, you also talked about witnessing, the power of witnessing. And we have seen this, you know, like groups of people come together and they don't want to go home, right? and they come back and they come back to the next program and the next program. There's something about having an experience, articulating that experience, sharing that experience in a group. And we also emphasize something we call contemplative communication, which is just really mindfully being present and listening non-judgmentally to what is being shared and receiving it, receiving this experience. And what we find is that by practicing this way of listening, we also get the gift of almost vicariously to some degree when people are describing the shimmering water, the release of pain in the shoulders when, you know, they immerse themselves in, you know, water or whatever it might be, right? We hear people express these vivid experiences and their physiological, you know, associated sort of components. And it's like we're there. It's like our bodies are experiencing it too. And so I think there is a power of witnessing. And then there's almost, again, this sort of vicarious sort of experience of the nature connection through other people. It really is just a remarkable thing to witness, to observe in a group. And then I guess the other thing, it comes back to choice, you know, and I know you emphasize this in your workshop and we emphasize it in our training. When we offer choice, for example, we will do, we start every program with a mindful movement, and it's often coordinating, you know, breath and eye movement, but then it can be eye movement alone, because we have people and that's the type of movement that works for them. It's accessible to them. Or then we often focus about on the face because we have people who have function in the face or the shoulders or the neck. So, or we might do the shoulders, but we offer different options and we actually encourage people with full mobility to experience other types of connecting and coordinating breath with movement. So even if people have full range of motion with their arms, for example, to experience it with just eye movement. And that takes away the hierarchy. There's no one way that's better than another way, right? In fact, it can be really helpful. It's just about bringing mindfulness to whatever it is you've chosen to do. And then always having that caveat, if anything feels uncomfortable, you take care of yourself. You make some modifications. I see that Charlotte wants to introduce a station break.
No, I was thinking the examples you were going to have people give.
Oh. Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. So at this point, I just want to open it up and pass it on to Karma and Brandy. Brandy, again, would you like to start us off and then we'll go to Karma?
Yeah. What comes to mind is just how the peer support aspect of being in this nature, you know, mindfulness program and involved in nature connection. It's been so such a nice thing to have just for me myself, meeting all the people with Eco Wisdom. We all have such a shared, you know, kind of experience on our varying disabilities. And, you know, some people have really used the nature connection for all different reasons in their life right now. But when we come together in our small group meetings, especially, I really find that we all really open up. You know, Karma's been with us in our small group meetings. And we just talk so much, just like you said, about what nature has been doing for us lately and how we're utilizing it for our own health benefits and even helping others. And then, you know, the other thing that I was thinking is the Van Dusen program that we just put together, It was such a wonderful experience to hold a meditation with a group of people, have that collective experience, and have those wind chimes going around the room. And I wasn't sure how everybody would, you know, accept it at first, because you're not really sure when people come to these experiences what they'll think. And I can tell they didn't want it to stop. We just kept going around and around with the wind chimes, and people had their eyes closed. And afterwards, we all just talked about how great it made us feel and how relaxed we felt. So it is, it's such a nice experience. And it's such a collective experience, and the peer support is just so important. So yeah, you have to share that.
Thank you so much, Brandy. Yeah, the peer support aspect of what EcoWisdom doing is it's novel. Like, no one else is doing nature and forest therapy guide as peer support with that kind of emphasis. So it really is a beautiful application. And Karma.
Well, I want to thank you, Brandy, for bringing that up, because it's like the magic, the gem of the whole thing. It's in action, and it's so genuine, and what an opportunity. Anyways, we're grateful for this community. I just wanted to say a little bit about, well, what you were talking about, Kari, offering choice, options. First of all, there's no judgment. We're using our contemplative communication. So we're offering maybe we could listen for a minute and see what comes by our ears and what could be triggered in our mind from that. Or we could see the sky and see how that came about in each person. But really, by doing this, I feel like we're inadvertently teaching people around us how to do contemplative listening and watching and awareness for themselves. So it's like we're helping empower people to be their own guide. And I've seen this now in action with a few people. And now I think I shared in one of our meetings, I used to go outside in the middle of the night and doing my sky watching and that. Well, I have neighbors joining me now, and they're telling stories and how that makes them feel. And it's such a beautiful thing. And this is expanding the community in ways I wasn't expecting. It wasn't a formal thing. But these practices that we learn and practice, they do emanate out like ripples on a pond. It's fabulous. Thank you.
Today we had a special opportunity to go deep into understanding the nervous system and the nurturing role of nature in bringing us into a healthier state of balance. In this EcoWisdom conversation, we also explored the factors that nature guides need to know and become familiar with as they facilitate forest bathing programs. What it can look like to become dysregulated, the kinds of mindful movement and other activities that can be woven into a program to offer care to the community, to its participants. And finally, we had something that's not touched upon in many programs, examining the needs and experiences of disabled and BIPOC participants who engage in mindful nature connection programs. So many people mention the connectedness, the community. So I hope today, as you were listening, you felt the community and you felt the desire to just within yourself see what it feels like to send love to your heart. If you see what it feels like to look at websites like this one to know where you can find an accessible wellness program. All of this information is critically important as we move ahead to build a more just society. I want to especially thank Dr. Kari and Dr. Melissa as EcoWisdom community and the EcoWisdom community members, Karma and Brandy. All of you are bringing the things that we say and wish that would occur, and we bring evidence that it is happening. So we look forward to hearing and seeing you on the next EcoWisdom Conversations. I'm Charlotte Farrell, your host, and I'm also thanking you on behalf of the Saluwa Show for letting us hear this tip of the iceberg of this mountain of information that you have that will help people. Well, I'll see some of you again next week at 10, and you know what I say when people ask what time it is. It's always love time, poem time.
love time, poem time, love time, poem time, love time, poem time, time for words from heaven to shine, love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme, love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon, love time, poem time.